Shrink Wrap Radio number 406, Listening to Your Gut with Dr. James Greenblatt.
It's Shrink Wrap Radio. All the psychology you need to know and just enough to make it dangerous. It's all in your head. And now here's your host, Dr. Dave.
My guest today is Dr. James Greenblatt, Assistant Clinical Professor of Psychiatry at Tufts University School of Medicine and an expert in integrative medicine. Among other things, we'll be discussing the role of food and our gut in emotional regulation and psychopathology. For more background information on Dr. Greenblatt, please go to our show notes at shrinkwrapradio.com. Now, here's the interview. Dr. James Greenblatt, welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio.
Thank you. Very glad to be here.
Well, I'm very pleased to have you on the show. I understand that you're both a psychiatrist and a pioneer in the field of integrative medicine. So maybe a good place for us to start is for you to tell us, what is integrative medicine?
Well, I refer to myself as an integrative psychiatrist practicing integrative medicine, because I'm, well-grounded in traditional psychiatry and a medical model where we treat symptoms with medications when needed. But the goal of integrative medicine is trying to find the underlying cause of illness and symptoms. And with both tools, when I work with patients, I find them just much more successful. So integrative psychiatry looks at the underlying causes, but it doesn't throw away traditional medical model if needed.
And how did you first become interested in integrative medicine?
Well, I think I went to medical school, believing that we're going to cure all of man's ills, with brown rice and kale. And so I was very much involved in, what I think is alternative medicine. And I realized that there was a tremendous need for, surgery, medicines, and repeatedly some of the life-saving benefits of traditional medicine. So I just eventually kind of got back to my roots and looking at what might be contributing, and particularly in my work with young children, where I was really horrified with my profession as a child psychiatrist, where medications were given to 2- and 3- or 4-year-old children without looking at metabolic or related conditions that could be contributing to the behaviors.
Oh, yes, there really are some alarming statistics about that out there. And it sounds like you and I might be of a more or less similar generation, because I too remember a time when we really were looking to things like diet and how diet affects us and so on, which is sort of what we're going to be discussing today. The way I discovered you and your work is that a guest in a previous interview about something totally different, he made a passing reference to the effect that probiotics had been used to treat depression. And I was shocked at that. I'd never heard anything about that. And, and I kind of pressed him and said, hey, can you back that up? Can you send me any references? So I set out on a quest to see what I could dig up online. And as a result, I discovered an article titled Gut Feelings, The Future of Psychiatry May Be Inside Your Stomach. And you were repeatedly mentioned in that article. I assume you've seen that article?
Yes, I have.
Yeah, I would think it would be a good promotional piece for you.
Well, I was quite amazed at the number of calls and how many people have on their own struggled with chronic GI problems and mental health problems, and their physicians and therapists look at them like they're crazy, that there's really no relationship. And so it did get a lot of kind of consumer interest in what is this relationship.
Yeah, so are you saying that the two often, in your experience, go hand in hand, that there's a psychiatric problem and there's a a GI gastrointestinal problem?
Well, the core, premise of integrative psychiatry is that everybody's different. And if we take any of our major psychiatric illnesses, depression, anxiety, or OCD, there might be multiple contributing factors. And one of the factors that I look at in every patient that comes into my office is the functioning of the GI tract. And there are two major variables that should be considered. And one is digestion. Is there proper digestion and absorption? And the second is sometimes there's overgrowth of certain bacteria or yeast that can produce chemicals that have effects in the brain. And these are essentially neurotoxins, if you will, that can cause symptoms. And that was what that case in the article was about. Somebody who, in a urine test, we picked up this elevation of this neuroactive chemical that's not supposed to be there because of an overgrowth of a strain of Clostridia, bacteria that's normally in the gut. And using just healthy bacteria, probiotics, was able to essentially eliminate the psychiatric symptoms.
Yeah, let me just read a little bit from that article so that listeners are on the same page with us. And so I'm reading from that article, quote, "Her parents were running out of hope. Their teenage daughter, Mary, had been diagnosed with a severe case of obsessive-compulsive disorder as well as ADHD. They dragged her to clinics around the country in an effort to thwart the scary, intrusive thoughts and the repetitive behaviors that Mary felt compelled to perform. Even a litany of psychotropic medications didn't make much difference. It seemed like nothing could stop the relentless nature of Mary's disorder." And then the article goes on to say, "That's what prompted Dr. Greenblatt to take a surprising approach. Besides psychotherapy and medication, Dr. Greenblatt also prescribed Mary a twice-daily dose of probiotics, the array of helpful bacteria that lives in our gut. The change in Mary was nothing short of miraculous. Within 6 months, her symptoms had greatly diminished. 1 year after the probiotic prescription, there was no sign that Mary had ever been ill." Anything else come to mind around that case?
Well, I still see her. She's in college and is doing well. And the OCD that was so disabling has been, really minimized to some thoughts in her head that doesn't interfere with any aspect of her life.
Well, that's wonderful. I'm wondering if there are any other exemplary cases that come to mind that you could share with us.
I think that, we have hundreds and hundreds of individuals. When we talk about the GI tract and behavior, sometimes we have young kids diagnosed with ADHD, and we find out that they have very significant fungal overgrowth in the GI tract, yeast, and treating them with antifungals can provide dramatic changes in behavior. And this particular marker that you described is called HPHPA. It's a long chemical name. But we have many, many other cases of elevations of this byproduct where we use high-dose probiotic. And it doesn't mean, and this is what gets confusing, it doesn't mean that everybody with OCD has this as a contributing factor. But in my world, it's certainly important to make sure and rule that out.
Well, in the article that we were discussing, you're quoted as saying that the gut is a second brain and that there are more neurons in the gastrointestinal tract than anywhere else except the brain. What more can you tell us about this?
Well, it's a fascinating, often neglected field that we're beginning to do more research on. And again, two parts of it. One is just the amount of nervous tissue There's more serotonin in the GI tract than in the brain. So when we give medications like antidepressants that are serotonin reuptake inhibitors, it has implications for GI tract functioning. The second part is just around the brain communicating to the GI tract when you're under stress. You don't digest food well. And the GI tract, you know, communicating with the brain. Things like inflammation and other food allergies or celiac disease, creating inflammatory process that does present to the brain. The area of probiotics that we talked about is kind of the lower digestive system, where there are, you know, 3 to 4 pounds of bacteria living in our GI tract.
Wow.
That provide very, very unique functioning for our health. We can't live without them.
Wow. Now, we've known that our emotions can impact our gut with anxiety, sometimes causing diarrhea or nausea and depression, causing a loss of appetite. But I gather that we now understand that it's more of a two-way street. Do I have that right?
Absolutely. So if we have a certain balance of bacteria in our gut, it can create behavioral and psychological symptoms, anxiety, depression, and lots of studies in mice, and now in humans. There's also a whole growing field of what's called a fecal implant, being able to change the bacteria in our colon by introducing bacteria from someone else.
That really sounds weird, but what an interesting approach. You know, this has some personal credibility to me, this idea of the sort of mind-body connection between the brain and our emotions and the gut. Some years back, I was studying to be a glider pilot, and I began to notice, although I wasn't consciously experiencing any fear, that every time after a long drive, it was about a 40-minute drive to get to the glider port where I was being trained, I had diarrhea every time. So even though I wasn't consciously afraid, that was telling me that something was going on.
Absolutely. I think that it's a growing field. The research actually is increasing pretty dramatically in the field of obesity and weight loss. And we're finding that individuals that are lean and consistently stay lean have a different kind of bacterial environment in their GI tract than those that are prone to being obese and overweight.
Well, that makes me wonder about the fecal implant that you referred to, and I'm wondering if they've tried a fecal implant, say, in mice or with obese mice, planting bacteria from a thin mouse. Has that kind of research been done, either on animals or human beings?
Oh, yes. The animal research has been ongoing for years. And the human research is primarily in things like Crohn's disease and GI, chronic GI tract illnesses. But it's certainly being speculated about eating disorder, weight, and obesity issues. And you know, I believe the time will be coming. We'll be thinking about it in terms of psychiatric illness.
Yeah. So I'm really interested in the science behind this, and you've talked some about that. If anything else comes to mind regarding the science of it, and I gather we have trillions of microbes that live in our GI tract. Did you say we have 4 pounds worth?
Yes, 3 to 4 pounds, you know, bacteria coating our GI tract lining, and the functions that we know about are: it protects our lining. It actually makes some vitamins for us, vitamin K and B12, and it kind of helps our immune system. So if there's a disruption to this relationship, and let's say that could be stress or could be heavy dose of antibiotics, and antibiotics will start killing off some of these healthy bacteria, we begin to get an increased growth of yeast and other bacteria, and there is a host of chemicals that get produced that can cross the stomach and GI tract and then go into the brain and have certain CNS effects.
Yeah. Well, how did you come to be aware? Do you remember how you first became aware of the fact that the gut might be involved in mental health disorders?
Well, it's primarily in my early work in the 90s with autistic children who almost always have GI tract problems and obviously have profound neuropsychiatric manifestations of their illness. So there was more and more research connecting abnormal digestion, abnormal bacteria in the gut to the autistic community. And as I started looking into this and doing lots of functional medicine testing, we were seeing patterns in more traditional psychiatric disorders like depression, anxiety, and ADHD.
Do we know anything about the specific pathways through which these microbes communicate with the brain?
Well, there are probably many. One is just the production of the immune response. So it produces inflammatory chemicals from an overactive immune system that then crosses the blood-brain barrier, and these are probably moved through the body, through the nervous system, likely through the vagus nerve. And then the other mechanism is likely just the ability of these probiotics to disrupt the GI tract so we get symptoms of what was, you know, called leaky gut. So we absorb proteins that aren't properly digested, and we develop a whole cascade of immune responses that also affects behavior, mood, and mental health.
Now, it's sort of been widely noted that, in general, physicians receive very little training on nutrition. I know that's been the case in the past. Do you think that's still the case, and is it changing at all?
It's not changing very much. In some ways, the medicine is getting more technologically savvy, and there's still very little room for basic nutrition, and there's some, you know, simple nutrition concepts that we used to incorporate into training psychiatry residents 20 years ago that's not being done now. So I think it's a big hole in our training, and it's a tremendous loss for our patients because it clearly has a role in mental health.
Yeah, yeah. Are you trying to do anything to rectify that?
Well, doing what we can. We do seminars for doctors. We do trainings in the U.S. and Canada, and there's books we've written for the consumer, and we're actually a group is working on a book for professionals on integrative psychiatry for depression.
Oh, good. Are there particular psychological conditions for which the gut is likely to be implicated? I know you've mentioned autism and ADHD.
I think autism, ADHD, and OCD are the most common, obsessive compulsive disorder, the most common disorders that we find gut-related problems that are significant.
Okay, and that article, again, that we referred to earlier, they mentioned research conducted with mice at McMaster University. And, for example, swapping out the gut microprobes of timid mice for those of brave mice, and that affected their risk-taking behavior. Is there other relevant research that comes to mind?
Just similar to what we've talked about, there's been in the mice literature both anxiety, depression, variables that they highlighted with rate depression in mice have been comparable studies. So improvement in anxiety, depression, and weight and appetite are the most consistent animal studies. And the human studies are really lagging, but I think the field of functional medicine and integrative psychiatry, clinicians who have been practicing this, it's been pretty standard and well-known for the past 30 years.
Are there critics of this approach that we've been discussing? And if so, what are the objections that they raise?
Well, yeah, there are critics. There are critics to the article that you use, because if you just look at the academic research, you would say that this is still preliminary research. And these individuals have never done or looked at a stool analysis on a patient, or the test that we look at called organic acid, which looks at metabolites of these bacteria in the gut. So the criticism is coming from people that don't know and essentially never heard of some of the testing that we do routinely. And it's just a shame that there's not more research, but all of the research in psychiatry now is only funded by pharmaceutical companies, so it is very hard to get research on, you know, scientifically based treatments that aren't pharmaceutical based.
Well, this is certainly a theme that I've heard from other interviewees, that you know, for a variety of new approaches, if they somehow do an end run around the pharmaceutical approach, the funding just doesn't seem to be there.
And it's getting harder and harder. And, you know, the flip side is we're also finding the more and more limitations to a pure psychopharm medical model for the treatment of these illnesses.
Right, right. Now, in your own clinical work, have you found that there are certain strains of probiotic bacteria that are particularly effective, either generally or for specific conditions?
I don't think we're at that level, and I hope we will be in the next 5 years. So there are, you know, companies that are developing different strains and trying to see if this one is more associated with rapid metabolism for obesity, and this one for depression. I don't think we're there yet, and so the one thing I have learned is from over the past 10 years by doing this every day is what you do need is higher strength, higher dose of the probiotic, of quality probiotics, to be able to make a difference. So 10 years ago, we might have used a supplement that had a million what's called CFU bacteria. And now, to make a difference, the woman that you talked about, we were utilizing supplements of 100 billion CFUs.
Well, that's interesting. That's something I wanted to discuss with you. For example, I'm assuming that a small carton of yogurt is probably not going to have enough bacteria to make much of a difference. And you mentioned that antibiotics can have an adverse effect on the microbes in the gut. So is yogurt going to do the job of restoring the balance?
Yogurt and a whole host of fermented foods, you know, like miso soup and pickled vegetables and many other fermented foods, sauerkraut, you know, would provide an ongoing healthy bacteria for your GI tract. But for the patients that we're seeing with actual abnormalities, then it's not likely to provide sufficient amounts. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is with yogurt, the kind of information we get is how much bacteria is when they started making the yogurt. There's really no guarantee that the bacteria is alive and has survived the processing part of making the yogurt. So certainly yogurt can be a healthy food and with active cultures for maintaining a healthy GI tract. Most cultures in the world have always had fermented foods except for the United States. important part of many culture diets, but it's probably not sufficient when we get the level of distress and the patients we're seeing.
Yeah, I think some of us have started to take probiotics, you know, who aren't suffering from any particular distress, but somehow I've gotten the idea that it's just a good thing to do prophylactically. Is that some? Do you agree with that stance or not?
Yes, I think, you know, the healthy GI tract is really based on the quality of the bacteria in our gut, and taking probiotics is an important part of that. And certainly anyone that's been taking an antibiotic should, my recommendation is that they're taking probiotics for, you know, at least a month after that, or for individuals who are under chronic stress.
There are lots, as you mentioned, there are a lot of commercial probiotic products on the market now. For example, I've been taking a daily dose of a capsule put out by Gero, is the name of the company, that claims a $5 billion per capsule. I've seen products advertising lower concentrations than that, as well as others advertising even higher concentrations. You mentioned $100 billion with your patient. Are there any kind of a general guideline that you could give us about potency?
No, I mean, I think that certainly the 1 to 5 billion would probably make sense as a maintenance dose. And you don't want to buy a cheap brand because, again, there's no guarantee that they're alive, and there's no regulation in this industry. So people can say anything on the bottle. There's no FDA or any monitoring board to know what's in the bottle. So you really want to get a reputable company and to know that there's a sufficient amount. There are preparations, just so you know, that for treating GI illness, that's, you know, we use 600 billion a day. Mm-hmm. So there are vast kind of differences in the kinds of amounts that's being used.
Now, you mentioned bottle. Actually, I've been taking capsules, so there's some kind of a dried powder in there, I would assume. You know, certainly the company asserts that they are live. Is it better to get a bottle of probiotics out of the refrigerator section, or do you think that the capsules are as effective?
No, for many people, the capsules are fine. I think most probiotics should be kept in the refrigerator, though, because they will last longer and maintain the health. Because, you know, to make a dent, you would want, you know, live bacteria that are going to be able to feed the GI tract. So you would want to keep them in the refrigerator.
Oh, that's a good tip, because I have not been doing that. And I don't know if are you willing to go out on a limb and recommend a brand or not?
Well, I mean, there's a company that I've been working with around other supplements, and they just had a very good probiotic. It's called Pure Encapsulation. So it's something that if you read about, you'll understand how complicated the process is to make sure you have healthy strains. And that's certainly a website I would look at and try to read the difference in both manufacturing and storing probiotics.
That was called Pure Encapsulation?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Now, I see that you've written a book on anorexia. Have you found probiotics to play an important role in your work on that?
Yes, the treatment of eating disorders, one of the most common complaints we get is really disruptive GI tract, the bloating, chronic GI problems and digestive problems. So the probiotics have been a huge help in many individuals with eating disorders, anorexia in particular. And for some, just like in that case you read, the probiotics was the core treatment because they had that same bacteria, because, you know, eating disorders is essentially an obsessive disorder around their weight or their health and their body. And so they had this abnormal bacteria in the gut. So that was the main treatment for some with eating disorders.
And I see that you have another book out on depression. What's been your approach and your experience in terms of treating depression?
The theme is the same, which is integrative psychiatry, looking at the underlying cause and try to stay away from our reflex, which is just symptomatic-based medicine. Everybody's depressed, needs an antidepressant. So the model is, for some individuals, we'll look at the GI tract. Oftentimes, it's deficiencies of nutrients, B12, vitamin D. Could be hormone deficiencies, thyroid, or testosterone. And so the list goes on, and I try to outline it in a very consumer, easily readable way to help explore some of these factors that could be contributing or essentially causing the depression.
And I see that you have a new book coming out on appetite control. What's the approach that you advocate in that book?
That came out last week, and that's been just a growing epidemic of binge eating. And binge eating disorder is at times associated with obesity, other times it's not. But what we look at for binge eating is the same kinds of things. Are people absorbing nutrients to help the brain make the chemicals, the peptides, to feel full? So we at first focus on absorption and digestion of nutrients, then we replete the nutrients, and then we also talk about the medicine if that's needed as well.
Yeah, speaking of medicine, I know you made reference to pharmaceutical medications in treating conditions like depression and OCD. It sounds like you have some concerns about those as compared to using probiotics. What can you say about that?
I mean, I use medicines as part of my practice, and that's why, again, we use the word integrative psychiatry. But we always look to see if we can avoid them or minimize the side effects. A very consistent finding we found over 20 years of doing this work is that if we replete some of the nutritional deficiencies and work on the GI tract, we really minimize the potential side effects to medication. The patient that couldn't tolerate a medicine, becomes better able to take a medicine if needed.
Okay, well. Go ahead.
No, we're just, I find too much in our field, people are either, everyone should be on medicine or medicines are the enemy. And I don't think either can't make sense. And that's the premise of integrative psychiatry. We look at helping our patients with what they need, and a nutritional foundation is really step one.
Okay. Well, as we wind down, is there anything more that you'd like our listeners to know?
No, I think we've hit most of it, that the importance of understanding an integrated picture is going to be the most helpful for those suffering with mental illness.
Okay. Well, Dr. James Greenblatt, I want to thank you for being my guest today on Shrink Wrap Radio.
I really appreciate the opportunity, Dave, and good luck to you.
Okay, well, now for something a little bit different. This is the section where I generally give my own comments and reactions to the interview. And we're going to do it a little differently today because I was approached by a graduate student in depth psychology from Sonoma State University who approached me with the possibility of serving as an intern for Shrink Wrap Radio. And I kind of wrestled with, well, geez, how can I integrate somebody into my workflow? And so that's something that we're still going to be exploring. But I thought this would be one good place where it could be very helpful, because often I struggle to figure out what I'm going to say about the interview. And so having the opportunity to dialogue with someone maybe would make it a lot easier. So my intern's name is Eric Hanley. And Eric, why don't you say hello to the folks out there and say a little bit more about your background?
Well, thanks, Dr. Dave. Again, this is Eric Hanley, and really excited to be here and see firsthand how the interview process worked today. It went very well.
Yeah, you watched me. You got to see behind the scenes, and I took you through some of the tools that I use, like Piezo for making a recording, Bias Peak Pro 7 for doing the initial round of editing of the actual interview, Skype. We went through the Skype process, and now we're doing this piece of the recording in GarageBand, so it's a whole lot all at once.
There sure are. There's a lot of different elements that really go into to making a podcast, and in particular, it was interesting to me to see how many programs there were to make something as substantial as Shrink Wrap Radio.
Yeah, you know, when I'm in my fundraising mode and I try to get across to people how much work is involved, you've kind of seen it, a bunch of it up. Actually, there's more, a lot more to come after this. But even to get to this point, would you say there's a lot of work involved or not?
Oh, absolutely. A lot of work here, a lot of editing and the preparation, of course.
Well, let's think about this interview that we just did with Dr. Greenblatt. And what stood out for you?
Well, I found it particularly interesting how much bacteria we have in our GI tract at any given time, 4 pounds of
right.
of bacteria, and really the use it has in regulating our systems and how that might affect how we feel on a day-to-day basis, not only physically, but mentally as well.
Yeah, for me, that was a new idea when that was first proposed in this other interview that I alluded to. And I was skeptical, you know, I was a bit skeptical.
Yes, and also kind of the adverse effects of using antibiotics and how that might deplete some of the very important bacteria that we have in our system. So you can really see how important it is to replenish these certain bacteria that help regulate our system.
Yeah. Now, one of the things that I think is kind of sad is I really got the impression that although there is some research going on that feeds into this approach, that there's probably not enough research to substantiate what he's doing. His clinical experience certainly seems to indicate that it's a very effective approach. But, you know, the basic research has to be there to get people to really pay attention and take it seriously.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And it seems like they've got a really a solid foundation from which to really take this a lot further. And I'm particularly intrigued by the notion that using dietary supplements and getting your GI tract healthy can help alleviate depression and anxiety and might make the use of psychotropic medication less necessary.
Yeah,
maintaining a healthy lifestyle.
Yeah. What was your reaction to the idea of, quotes, a fecal implant? Sorry to put you on the spot here.
Yeah. Well, it seems like a very, very straightforward way of introducing new bacteria that might be helpful to someone.
Yeah, it sounds gross. I mean, if they're really doing what I think they're doing, and I think that is what they're doing, they might actually be using a stool from one person and somehow getting it into the tract of the other person.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. My intern is tongue-tied with that idea. So you did hear me mention that that Dr. Greenblatt has several books out there, and so I'm sure you'll find them if you go to Amazon.com using our widget in the right-hand sidebar. Yeah, so look for those books there if you're interested to learn more.
Dr. Greenblatt also recommended a probiotic supplement called Pure Encapsulation.
Oh, yeah, I'm glad you're mentioning that. And so I imagine a Google search will bring that up, and you'll be able to get more information. Also, I'm going to put in our show notes a link to the article that we were discussing. So that would be a great way for you to follow up on this interview as well. So before I move on to the next section, I'd like to say thank you, Eric, for being my discussant today, and hopefully we will do this again.
Oh, thank you, Dr. Day, for having me in.
Caroline, a passionate and avid listener from Zurich, Switzerland. I love Shrink Wrap Radio because the shows are very inspiring, motivational, and educational. They cover a wide range of diverse topics presented in an entertaining and articulate way. In particular, what brought me to the show is Dr. Dave himself as a person. He's an incredibly erudite professor in both worlds of psychology, in the academic / mainstream and, quote, more alternative fields. And he's an excellent and empathetic listener. This makes him as a unique host, and maybe this is the hidden secret of getting Shrink Wrap Radio addicted. There is no other podcast show that I could think of that offers this combination. Thank you so much, and I hope you will continue the show for a while, Dr. Dave.
Thank you, Caroline from Zurich, Switzerland, for your enthusiasm, for your financial support, and for encouraging others to help support the continuation of Shrink Wrap Radio by becoming financial supporters themselves. I'm very grateful to you, Caroline, and all those others of you who've chosen to help support Shrink Wrap Radio. If you're listening to this and you're not one of those who have become a financial supporter, please won't you do so and get your name proudly on our honor roll on the website. You'll feel great, and I'll feel oh so supported. There is now another brand new way for you to support the show, through our new advertising affiliation with Audible.com. Now, I imagine that many of you are already signed up with Audible.com. You like listening to podcasts, so it's very likely that you also listen to audiobooks. However, if you are not signed up with Audible.com, boy, do I ever have a deal for you. First, though, let me say that an affiliation with Audible.com makes perfect sense for this show because I've been a member for just about forever. I've been a huge supporter of their service, recommending it to friends for years. So I'm really happy to have the chance to generate a little income for the show by signing up some new listeners. Currently, they have more than 150,000 titles covering both fiction and nonfiction categories in an incredible range of genres. By the time you hear this, I probably will have interviewed Bridget Schulte, author of Overwhelmed, Work, Love, and Play When No One Has the Time. This epidemic of busyness that she writes about affects us all psychologically, and so it's something for all of us to understand. So here's the offer. If you're not already a member of Audible.com, you can sign up using my link and choose any book you wish from their vast library for absolutely free, including the one I just mentioned, Overwhelmed. You have no obligation to continue your subscription, but I'm betting you probably will. So here's the information to get your free audiobook. You can either click on the little audible.com banner link in our left-hand sidebar, or go directly to audibletrial.com/shrink. And that's all there is to it. Finally, let me remind you about the International Association for the Study of Dreams Conference in Berkeley, California, running June 4th through June 8th of 2014. It's open to all, and I hope to see you there. Just click on the link in the left-hand sidebar at Shrink Wrap Radio for full details and registration.
Shrink Wrap Radio was bringing it on down the line. Dr. Dave knows it's all in the mind.
Thanks once again, Louise Callanan from Down Under, for sharing that creative musical transition. I think I used it on the last one, but hey, it bears repeating. Now let me share a couple of recent emails from our Shrink Wrap Radio listener community. First, we hear from Kian, who writes, "Dear Dr. Dave, I love listening to the show. Really interesting and insightful. My wife and I are clinical psychology trainees in Ireland, and we enjoy giving each other a number of an episode to listen to in the morning so that we can discuss it together later in the day." How wonderful. I love that. He goes on to say, "I'm emailing regarding a potential guest we think would be great to have on the show. His name is Dr. Declan Ahern." I may not be saying that last name correctly. "And he is a clinical psychologist here in Ireland. He is also a qualified Gestalt psychotherapist and the chairperson of the Irish Working Group of the European Federation of Psychological Associations. His area of discussion is the demedicalization of mental health, where he talks about revolutionizing access to psychological care. He held a conference on the topic in the University of Limerick in Ireland with Dr. Jeffrey Magnavita, formerly president of the Division of Psychotherapy at APA, as a guest speaker. They spoke of moving the practice of psychological therapies from the traditional medical model towards clinical psychologists and psychotherapists taking more responsibility and more of a leadership role in the area. If this is not something you are interested in, I know that he is a keen speaker on the topic of mindfulness and is very insightful on the discussion of East meeting West in terms of meditation, mindfulness, well-being, and psychology. I hope the possibility of speaking with Dr. Ahern is of interest to you. You can email me back if that is the case. Incidentally, I'm quite biased in my recommendation of Dr. Ahern as a guest on your show because he is my father. But I know he would make another interesting guest for your audience. Best regards, Kian Ahern." Well, Kian, that's a great recommendation. First of all, thanks so much for being such a devoted fan of the show. And I'm glad to hear that both you and your wife are finding it useful in your own training to become psychotherapists. And I'm really interested in interviewing your father. It kind of hits home for me at several levels. I'm interested in putting together a continuing education series on mindfulness, on therapists who use the mindfulness approach. So that is of particular interest. And of course, the medicalization or demedicalization of psychotherapy is a topic that I've touched on many times in other interviews. And so maybe we can hit both of those themes in an interview with him. So why don't you send along to me an email address where I can reach out to him, and I'll be sure to do that soon. Next, we hear from Sarah Hannah Radcliffe, a longtime listener and one of my all-time favorite guests from several past episodes. And Sarah Hannah writes, "Honestly, Dr. Dave, your podcasts, unbelievably, are getting better and better. After every show, I'm determined to write you to tell you how much I love the interview, but then I get busy and don't get to it. But I can delay no longer!" Exclamation point. "I want you to know how much I'm enjoying them. I really appreciated the bio you gave on Philip Zimbardo at the end of that interview. He had such a fast way of talking, and I didn't quite know whether to take him seriously or not. The bio helped me place what he was saying and how he said it, and without that information, I simply would have undervalued that content. After your interview with Bava Ram, I was inspired to read his book, and I've been recommending it ever since to my clients and everyone else I meet. What a hero of the spirit this man is. I especially enjoyed the interview on you and found that I could identify with so much of what you spoke about. And although I won't go on, I will just say that I've benefited from and really enjoyed all these interviews, and my respect for you as a gentle, perceptive interviewer just continues to grow." Well, thank you so much for that, Sarah Hannah, and coming from you, it's high praise indeed. And I should also mention that Sarah Hannah is a financial supporter of this podcast. And so if you take her praise as seriously as I do, that's another plug for you joining her in that effort. So with that, I think we'll wrap it up for today. You can send your emails to shrink@shrinkwrapradio.com. In addition to the emails, you can also leave comments about individual shows in the comments area on the site, and you can leave voicemail on our new message phone, relatively new now, at 206-337-7170. You can also leave voicemails using our iPhone/Android app, about which you can find full details in the Apps tab on our site. Thanks again to Dr. James Greenblatt for sharing his experiences in integrative medicine as applied to psychiatry. My next guest, in fact, will be Bridget Schulte, author of Overwhelmed: Work, Love, and Play When No One Has the Time. I hope you can find the time to join us then. Until next time, this is Dr. Dave saying, it's all in your mind.
You've been shrink-wrapped by Dr. Dave. All the psychology you need to know, and just enough to make you dangerous.